Good morning, everybody, and thank you for being with us today on WRKF, your NPR news source. 297-5633 is the number, and outside the area, the way to participate is 877-217-5757. Beautiful weekend, and the St. Patrick's Day Parade, the 25th one, is slated for tomorrow, and hopefully the weather will be as beautiful tomorrow as it is today. And, of course, this is also the switch to daylight savings time this weekend. So Saturday night, turn your clocks ahead. Spring forward. And in just a bit, we'll hear from Navy Commander John Philostrat, LSU journalism graduate who once worked with me at the Louisiana Network as an anchor reporter and has gone on to find work with the U.S. military. And he has some thoughts that he conveyed not so long ago about the don't ask, don't tell policy of the military. And we'll converse with him about that and much more. We begin our show with two gentlemen who were involved with a production at the Breck Independence Park Theater, Circo Comedia. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Hi, bonjour.
And you have come a long ways to be with us, correct?
Yeah, we're from Montreal and traveling and touring right now.
And how long have you been in our fair city?
We just arrived 2 days ago, and we're just enjoying the place. It's the first time in Louisiana. And it's really interesting for us because we are from Montreal and we know all the story about Acadians who have been deported to New Orleans and here. So we were in the French Quartet yesterday, and it was just great to see that.
So this is a Circo Comedia at the Breck Independence Park Theater. You guys are from Montreal. And you have appropriately names that are synonymous with that country and, that community and north of the United States. Jean and Patrick, tell us about the production.
So it's a really funny, we can say family show because everybody enjoy it, the kids and the parents. And it's a visual comedy show with a lot of circus performance. Basically, it's my show. And I got a new assistant just for the show. And, of course, Patrick, he's speaking English really well, eh, Patrick?
yes, it's good for the legs.
Well, and he tried to help me, but it goes to disaster sometimes.
Oops.
And how long have you been doing this?
We're doing this show for 4 years together. And basically each part of the show, there's a performance. Balance swords on my chin. I do bicycle tricks. So the kids love that. Like the bicycle, Patrick's playing the drum for me, but I get carried along and ask all the time the technician to play songs so he can dance.
So it's Patrick Côté, right. And Jean Sauchet.
Exactly.
Okay.
Wow.
And you will be with Circo Comedia. 4 years this has been all over the country, and the stop that we're talking about is the Breck Independence Park Theater, and Michael Aguirre, the communication manager for Breck, is also in studio. Michael, why don't you step to the microphone and tell us about the logistics of this, how we can see these two fine gentlemen do their thing right here in Big BR.
Yes, good morning, Jim. This is a great performance. We're looking forward to it. That folks can get tickets. They can purchase it at the Independence Park Theater. The number that they can call is 225-216-0660. They can call the box office. That's Tuesday through Friday, 10 to 5 p.m., and then 1 hour before the show. They can also, if they, you know, can't get to the phone quickly, they can get the tickets online at theparktheater.com. So we look forward to everybody coming out. I know it's going to be after the St. Patrick's Day Parade, so we're looking forward to people coming out.
Okay, so the time?
The time is a 7 p.m. showing, and it's going to be about an hour show.
An hour? A crazy show.
7 p.m.
Don't miss that show.
7 p.m. tomorrow, so tomorrow night after the St. Patrick's Day festivities, it'll be a fun time at the Breck Independence Park Theater. I know you're quite proud of that venue.
Yes, we are quite proud of that venue. We're going to actually also have some events coming up that we're looking forward to. We do a lot of out-of-studio type of productions, and then we also do some in-house productions. So we're looking for a production coming out on April 9th. It's The Little Mermaid, so that's going to be another family event that we're looking forward to. You know, Independence Park Theater is great. It's right there in the central part of Baton Rouge, and so we're looking to kind of get, acts like Circo Comedia to come out, and so we're really, really glad to have them out here.
Well, you guys have performed everywhere.
Yeah.
Have you been to Louisiana before?
No, it's the first time here.
Well, that's unfortunate, considering that you're from a country that has a connection to this
area. Exactly. I mean, it's been so long, I want to come and perform in SOAP that we're going to perform tomorrow night.
So who are the biggest targets of your comedy?
The biggest targets? Well, I don't understand the question.
I'm not talking about big literally, but it's a funny show, and I would imagine some people are subject for laughs at their expense.
Yeah, I mean, the show, it's really, the people are going to be on the edge of their seat. I mean, we play a lot with the danger and the stunt and the acrobatic technique. So people are going to be amazed to see, oh, my God, they don't do that. Oh, my God, they're going to do that. Oh, my God, they fall. Oh, my God, you know. This is the feeling of the show, and there's always a laugh to relieve the tension. So it's really, really funny show. Don't miss that show. We won't believe it.
So it's a real physical show.
Yeah, we're tired after the show.
I can see you guys are in shape, and you're all smiles and good cheer. So I would think tomorrow, after a busy day in our area, that some folks will want to unwind at the Breck Independence Park Theater for Circo Comedia, and these two fine gentlemen, Patrick Côté and Jean Sauché, have arrived here in our community from Montreal. Once again, Michael, for those who want more information.
Yes, sir. For more information, they can go to the box office, which is 225-216-0660, or they can go to our Independence Park Theater website, which is theparktheater.com.
Very good. And we'll look forward to hearing from you again soon. Yesterday on this program, we had Buckskin Bill Black. He was talking about the genesis of the Baton Rouge Zoo, and I know this is a big year for the zoo.
Yes, sir. This is a really big year for the zoo. We're coming up on March the 27th and 28th, we're celebrating 40 years of the zoo, Zippity Zoo Fest. That's going to be going on at the zoo. So we'd love for kids and families to come out for that. Also,
now, what is the date on that,
Michael? That's the 27th and the 28th. So it's a weekend event.
Okay, a couple of weeks away.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes, sir. And then April the 17th, we're opening our Realm of the Tiger exhibit. It's an attraction for families. It's an Asian exhibit, and it's going to feature three Malayan tigers, a white tiger that we're bringing back, and also some Simon gibbons, koi fish. And this is something that I think the community's been seeing as they walk into our Baton Rouge Zoo, but, you know, this is something that now we're having our opening, and we're looking forward to families coming out to it. So we're really excited about that also, Jim.
Well, and you should be. The zoo, as I stated yesterday, is one of the largest in the United States, and certainly in the South. There aren't many of the size of the zoo here in Baton Rouge.
And that is correct.
As far as, Atlanta and Houston may be the only ones that
yes,
are
there? Yes, sir, that is correct.
Biggest zoo in the state by far,
mm-hmm.
much bigger than Audubon.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Circo Comedia, Jean Sauché and Patrick Côté, they will be with us tomorrow night, and we'll certainly call on Michael Aguirre again soon to hear more about Breck's activities, including the big anniversary of the Baton Rouge Zoo, March 27th and 28th.
Okay. And then our Realm of the Tiger, 17th.
There you go, April 17th.
April 17th.
The roar is back. So some big cats at the BR Zoo.
Yes, sir.
And we switch gears now, and we're joined in studio by Commander John Philostrat, United States Navy.
Good
Hello,
morning,
John.
Jim.
How are you?
Good.
John is a man who's had much accomplishment in his young life as a journalist, as a lawyer, and a couple of degrees in journalism, one from Louisiana State University in 1990, and spent about 3 years here as a reporter. And
best 3 years of my life.
Well, they were good years for all of us because we were associated with you. But you were at LSU recently, and I know you came to talk to students and about inspiring them for their careers, and you ended up talking about Don't Ask, Don't Tell and getting national publicity about it. And it's rare to have a military person speak as forthright as you did on that issue. But where does it stand right now as far as the military policy on gays in the U.S. Armed Forces?
Currently, it's don't ask, don't tell. That's the law. And that's the law that, you know, as a military public affairs officer, we support and the chain of command supports. It was unique that on the day that I spoke to LSU, the topic was aid to Haiti. And I was stationed in the U.S. Pacific Fleet, and we would go out and do these medical relief missions with the USS Mercy. And I was fortunate enough to plan some of those, so I was really familiar with the aircraft carrier that was out there in Haiti because I served on a sister ship out at Everett, Washington, the Abraham Lincoln. So I was talking about that, and this issue came up being a college campus, and it was a military and public affairs and the media course that I was talking to. So they asked me about it, and as a public affairs officer, I gave the standard. Here's the law, we follow it. And then as a journalist, former journalist, I expressed my own personal opinion. I was clear about it. It was a personal opinion. And my quote showed up in the Baton Rouge Advocate right next to the Admiral Mullins. So I was quite surprised to see that, because my mom's friend sent her the email, and I was getting calls from all over the place, including you, which was unintended, but I'm glad to be here, and thanks for having me on the show. And yeah, it's very controversial, and it's one that it's being reviewed right now. That current policy that's been in place since the Bill Clinton years, and so we'll see what happens. And whatever happens from a military standpoint, we'll follow the law, of course.
297-5633 if you'd like to join us, Commander John Philostrat, U.S. Navy. He was in Hawaii for a few years. How many?
Yeah, 2 years at the U.S. Pacific Fleet, and before that in Everett, Washington, right outside of Seattle, aboard aircraft carrier USS Abraham Lincoln. And that was interesting. When I was on the Lincoln, we got to travel all around the world and made stops in Sasebo, Japan, and in Singapore, and Indonesia. And it was a unique experience to go see all these countries and get to interact with the people. And the U.S. Navy, I can tell you, when we go into these ports, we're all about diplomacy and trying to, be good citizens and good ambassadors. And we always thought, with the Lincoln, at least on that tour, we were part of the State Department and not the Defense Department, because we were going in there doing all these great things, these humanitarian missions. And it was a great experience. And I got to talk to, foreign media all over the place. And my training at LN and WAFB Baton Rouge certainly helped me out. So.
Yeah, John worked for WAFB as well in this community, and has noted he was a reporter almost right out of college at the Louisiana Network. But he is now a commander in the U.S. Navy, and he has opined about the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy. You're based in New Orleans now.
Based in New Orleans, I'm in the reserves. I got off active duty after 10 years, and my civilian employer, Jacobs Technology, we run the NASA Mishu Assembly Facility. So I actually have drill weekend this weekend, and I'm based out of New Orleans. I support a command that's in Millington, Tennessee, called the Navy Community Outreach Office, Navy Office of Community Outreach. And we go around the country supporting Navy Weeks, which are not fleet weeks, they're Navy weeks. We don't have ships, but we go in and we tell the public about the Navy in areas that normally don't have a lot of Navy presence. So that's kind of what we do as an outreach.
Well, on the topic at hand, the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy was introduced as a compromise measure in 1993 by President Clinton. While campaigning for the presidency, he had promised to allow citizens, regardless of sexual orientation, to serve openly in the military. This was groundbreaking news in 1993. On December 21st, President Clinton issued Department of Defense directive, which, while following the letter of Congress's restrictions, attempted to soften them by focusing on homosexual conduct rather than sexual orientation, and stating that military applicants are not to be asked about their sexual orientation. But is the policy working? Is it really functional, or is this a mess?
Well, I can only talk about my experiences, and I want to make that clear. For example, I'll give you an example on board the aircraft carrier. If you did your job and you did it well and you did not bring discredit upon the country or the uniform, I personally don't care if you're black, white, Asian, whatever, or, your sexual preference or your religion or anything else, because if you did the job, you did it well. That's what I was worried about, and I wasn't worried about all the politics. And so speaking from a personal standpoint, That's my view, and it seemed to be working well. There are some who might take advantage of it and who don't want to serve and want to get out of the military and might come up with a, hey, I'm gay. So once you say that, you're on your way out. So from that standpoint, yeah, it might not work that well.
297-5633. We'll be back in a moment on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to WRKF, your NPR news source. 297-5633 is the number. Outside our area, 877-217-5757. Some more time with John Philostrat, Commander John Philostrat of the United States Navy, based in New Orleans, and he is a graduate of the Manship School of Mass Communication, class of 1990, also a master's in journalism from Southeastern, right?
In history from Southeastern.
Okay, that's
yeah.
right. I remember that. Michael Kurtz was one of your
major professors. That's right. I saw him on the air the other day talking about JFK.
Yeah, and then Loyola Law School, and now he is a guy who is in an important position with the U.S. military, the Navy, and the Navy has always had a strong presence in New Orleans. And John Philostrat, was it last month? I think it was last month, February 2nd, he was at LSU at the Manship School and got some questions regarding the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy, which is now a major topic once again. And John gave his opinion that gays in the military have served with distinction and that really, in his personal opinion, he doesn't care if a person is gay or straight, that they should be allowed to serve if they're doing their job. Now, 2006 Zogby International poll of military members found that only 26% were in favor of gays and lesbians serving in the military, 37% opposed, and 37% expressing no preference or unsure. So it would appear that this is a polarizing issue in the military. Is that a fair statement?
I think it is, but I always bring it back to, you know, we can't discriminate based on race. We can't discriminate based on religion. To make it fair, we shouldn't discriminate based on your personal preference of what you do outside your job, as long as it's not illegal. So to me, you know, I'm like Admiral Mullen, the Joint Chief, Chairman of Joint Chiefs of Staff. He's like, hey, let's make this thing right, and he's pushing for the ban to be lifted, and you know, I support that on a personal basis, and I think. Serving in the fleet, as I have, I think that you're always going to have that issue, that polarizing issue, but we should protect all people, and as long as they want to serve and they serve honorably and don't disgrace the uniform, either in uniform or out of uniform, you should be able to live and work unimpeded.
Okay. 877-217-5757 for John Philostrat. Todd says a listener asked about recent polling. I mentioned the 2006 Zogby International poll, but the most recent survey on this issue was last month by the CBS New York Times operation, showing that in the country, Americans favor allowing gay men and lesbians serving openly in the military, 58% to 28%. So that's interesting that it appears the public viewpoint is different on this than the viewpoint in the military. Is there any explanation for that?
You know, the only thing I can say is that a lot of young folks, you know, come in the military and they want to fit in. They want to do their job, and it's kind of a macho thing, you know, especially depending on what branch you're in, and if you're different. Then you're going to be sort of, I guess, ostracized. And whatever you do, that's in high school. I mean, I have a high schooler, a couple in high school, and that's that way. I think it's just human nature. So I can't really explain why, but I think that as a leader, as a senior leader, I cared for all my sailors, and I tried to do right by them and take care of them, and I didn't really care. You know, as long as they served honorably, I didn't care if they were male, female, white, black, you know, what religion they are, as long as you do your job and you had a passion for it, and that's what I was looking for.
Well, in an interview last year in July, not so long ago, Colin Powell said he thought the policy was correct for the time about the Don't Ask, Don't Tell edict from President Clinton, but that, I'm quoting him, 16 years have gone by, and I think a lot has changed with respect to attitudes within our country, and therefore I think this is a policy and a law that should be reviewed. So with the passage of time, it appears that some guys, some people who have served with distinction, like General Powell, who at the time in 1993 was an opponent of what President Clinton was doing, and he embraced this compromise reluctantly, he appears to have come full circle on this issue.
Yeah, and I think as people look at it, you have to talk to folks that are in the military now. And, of course, this is not the official Navy view. I want to make that clear. This is just my personal view. And I think that you treat everyone with dignity and respect. You know, and that's the way I look at it. This is, to me, it's not an issue any different than a religious one or a race or, you know, creed, whatever. As long as they do their job, they do it well. And look, this is a conduct issue, in my opinion. You can't go out and have a heterosexual relationship if you're married, okay? And that's against UCMJ, Uniform Code of Military mm-hmm. Justice. Or you can't be involved with someone in your own command, okay? Right. That's fraternization. So this is a conduct issue. So no matter if it's a heterosexual or homosexual, to me it's a conduct issue, and you have to conduct yourself with honor and follow the rules.
297-5633 for Commander John Philostrat, U.S. Navy, New Orleans. Dez in South Downs. Hello, Dez. You're on WRKF.
Hi, Jim. I want to thank your guest for the dignity he's giving this issue for people who serve and who want to serve, no matter what their persuasion is. I've, for many years, had a question about the language involved in this, and I think there's one word that might change the way this is colored nationally and the way this is viewed, and that is changing the word from openly gay to admittedly gay. Because I think that many Americans don't understand the difference between openly and flagrantly, and imagine gay pride parades on the Nimitz instead of just being able to have your spouse's or your partner's picture in your locker, in your wallet, to be able to say, hey, I'm worried about my partner back at home. He's all by himself trying to foot the bills. Just to be able to talk about things and admit things in the normal way that, and I say normal meaning socially, culturally, demographically, meaning the norm, you know, the cultural norm, in the regular way that everyone else talks about their heterosexual spouse. And I'll take your answer without commenting further. Thank you.
That's a good point. I mean, if I don't think anybody wants to see gay pride, parade on the Nimitz, as you said, or on a ship. Because that goes against military bearing. Just like you wouldn't want to see a beer bus party with, you know, girls coming out popping out of a cake. Okay, that's unacceptable behavior. It goes against military bearing. And as long as you wear, like I say again, you wear the uniform with pride, distinction. You don't discredit it. You can't do those things. You know. In uniform. I'm not going to go to a bar in uniform and just, you know, act crazy and go down to the French Quarter and discredit the uniform at a strip joint, for example. I would never do that. And so just like, you know, I wouldn't expect any other type of bad behavior, as I would say, or unacceptable behavior to happen, you know, regardless. So, I mean, We have a standard we have to follow. Some say it's higher than the public standard, but I say it's as long as you don't discredit the uniform in any manner, then you should be able to serve and not be ostracized regardless of your religion. Hey, look, on the ship that I served on, we had Wiccan, you know, ceremonies because that was the religion that these persons wanted to practice, so they were allowed to do that. I know it's apples and oranges in a little bit, but we didn't ostracize or discriminate against them for doing that, just like we wouldn't if, you know, someone's talking about their partner, whether it be, you know, gay or straight. So, and again, personal opinion there, but, hope I answered your question,
Des. Well, we appreciate your opinions, and here's a guy who knows the military well, Commander John Philostrat, 297-5633, still time to get in with him. During President Obama's State of the Union address in January, he stated that he will work with Congress and the military to finally repeal the law that denies gay Americans the right to serve the country they love because of who they are. I'm quoting the president. He made similar statements during previous speeches. However, his State of the Union speech was the first in which he definitively committed to repealing the law on a set timetable. United States citizens can look for a congressional act to repeal the federal law during the 2010 year. In response to President Obama's State of the Union pledge, the Human Rights Campaign announced the Voices of Honor campaign to make the president's call for open military service a reality. Tom Thomas downtown, John, asks about gays in the military in the past. Even though there's been this prohibition, there certainly have been gay people who have served with distinction. I don't think there's any doubt about that. So how have they done it under these conditions?
And I've had shipmates who I knew were gay, and we're friends with them, and they you know, basically served well, and they it wasn't, you know, some people say, well, I don't want, you know, the person coming on to me. That never happened. They knew that, hey, I was married with kids, and that was my, you know, my situation, and they never disrespected that of me, and just like I never disrespected or had a problem with what they did, as long as, like I say again, they were served well and didn't break the law. Okay, I want to make sure, you know, that's a distinction there. And right now, as a member of the military, I do have to follow what the law is, and I do.
Well, it is interesting that even though this was designed to make it more palatable to be gay and serve in the military has discharged over 13,000 troops under Don't Ask, Don't Tell. That's in less than 17 years, and the number of discharges per year under DADT dropped sharply after the September 11 attacks and remained relatively low since then. Discharges exceeded 600 every year until 2009. And it is 13,389 is the last number we know of people discharged from the military because of a violation of the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy. And it's 3,158 in the Navy, 3,650 in the Army, 2,477 service people in the Air Force, and 889 Marines. So what do you think is going to happen?
Well, I know that they're looking at it. They're going to review it. They want to, with something this drastic, they want to make sure that they do it with a lot of study and caution. You know, it would be interesting to see out of that number, those numbers that you just read, how many said that they were gay and really weren't. They just wanted to get out of serving. That to me would be an interesting, and I don't think you could ever really figure that out or that number, but what I think is going to happen, you know, don't have a crystal ball, but I do think that, you know, other navies that we've served with in RIMPAC, for example, which is Rim of the Pacific Exercise out in Hawaii, you know, a lot of other navies don't have this policy, and it seems to be working. And like I say, I can only speak from personal experience. I think that if it is lifted, life will go on, and folks will hopefully not take advantage of that. Like I say, if you're serving in the military, you're doing it because you want to be there. You're serving your country. You want to advance. The military is still the greatest meritocracy in the world. You're promoted for the most part based on your fitness reports and evaluations, and the more you work harder, the better, the more you'll promote. And, you know, you can start out as the lowliest seaman and work your way up to be a captain. And that to me is, as long as you're performing and you're doing it honorably, you should be able to do it.
Well, there is a cost to this. In February of 2005, 5 years ago, the Government Accountability Office released estimates on the cost and cautioning that the amount may be low. The GAO reported $95.4 million in recruiting costs and $95.1 million for training replacements for the troops that were discharged from 1994 through 2003. And as we see in today's Baton Rouge Advocate's top story about Republicans on Capitol Hill opposing earmarks, most of the earmarks are at a much lower cost than the cost to enforce this. But let's say that the ban is lifted and gays are able to serve in the military just as straight people, same rules for everybody. Would that change anything dramatically?
My personal opinion is no, but I've listened to those flag officers and general officers who say, hey, you know, it might be a morale problem. I think that's something that they have to look at. From my level, and I'm a mid-grade, officer, I'm worried about, folks not drinking and driving and doing the things that are going to get them in trouble, get them hurt. I really didn't have to worry. I didn't worry about this. And I did have a couple of sailors that worked for me who we all kind of suspected, but like I say, we have to follow don't ask, don't tell.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as they did their job, that's what I was worried about. And for every single instance, in my personal opinion or my situation, it worked out fine. It was the other issues that got people in trouble is, going out and drinking and driving or not showing up to work on time or these other things that I had to discharge folks for. It wasn't for this.
Well, does the military rank and file, do they have opinions about proclamations made by presidents such as this one?
I certainly can't speak for the military in general or even the Navy in general. I can just speak for my personal opinion is that that's the last thing on my mind when I was out mm-hmm. to sea trying to do my job away from my family, missing birthdays and anniversaries and Christmases and all this other stuff serving. I did it because I wanted to do it, and I'm glad I did it. And it's been a good career. I didn't really focus on that, to be quite honest with you.
Well, we're glad you're serving us as a commander in the U.S. Navy, John Philostrat, journalist, lawyer, man about town, now back in his home state. And good to see you again, John.
And great to be here.
Take care. And we'll have more of the show right around the break. Latest on the Baton Rouge Ballet Theater and much more as we move along. And we're glad you're with us. 297-5633 if you'd like to join the conversation. Outside Baton Rouge, it's toll-free, 877-217-5757. You're listening to the Jim Engster Show on WRKF, your NPR news source. This is Jim Engster. You're listening to WRKF, your NPR news source. Todd Dunn is the producer, and you'd like to join us, 297-5633. We always welcome your insights. Today, by the way, is the 12th day of March, 2010, birthday number 77 for the venerable Gus Weil, who is a man of immense talent, of course, the longtime host of Louisiana Legends on Louisiana Public Broadcasting, and has handled many politicos through the years as they have sought public office, and many of whom have won under the tutelage of the legendary Gus Weil. And we hopefully will talk with him again very soon. And born on the same day, same year, March 12, 1933, George Washington Eames, the longtime civil rights activist, former head of the Baton Rouge NAACP, now a major advocate for the handicapped. George Eames is 77 years old, and I know he listens to this show on occasion. So happy birthday to Gus Weil and George Eames, born March 12, 1933. And in studio is Tamara Sabine from the Baton Rouge Ballet Theater. And there is much happening with her organization in the near term. And before we get to the most pressing matter, coming later in the month, March 27th and 28th, you'll have a production of Cinderella, the classic fairy tale, comes to life. What's going to happen?
Oh, thank you, Jim. Yes, Cinderella will be March 27th and 28th at the River Center Theater. On both days, the performances are at 2 p.m. Playing the role of Cinderella is Helen Daigle, who is from Baton Rouge and is currently dancing with the Louisville Ballet. And playing Prince Charming is Robert Dunbar, and he's also with the Louisville Ballet with her.
And the Cinderella Classic is one of dreams coming true, enthralling audiences anew. It's an old story with a new twist, and you do great work at the Ballet Theater. I know Molly Bookman and Sharon Matthews are probably working on this right now.
They sure are. We're in rehearsals now pretty much every day, every weekend, getting ready for Cinderella. So, yeah, they're working really hard on that.
All right, and there's the Cinderella Glass Slipper Ball, right?
That's right. It's basically Cinderella and Prince Charming's wedding reception. And it's held at Baton Rouge's own fairy tale castle, the old state capital. After each performance, the girls and their parents and some young men, too, walk over and they get to meet the performers. They can dance with them. They can take photographs with them. We have wedding cake and wedding punch and party favors for the children. And this year we're actually trying something a little new. We are actually doing door prizes for the adults. So that's going to be a new twist.
Well, you're busy, busy bee. And in addition to the preparation for Cinderella, which is 2 weeks away, 27th and 28th. And by the way, if you'd like more information or if you'd like to find seats, 766-8379
right.
Or BatonRougeBallet.org.
Right.
Are the best ways to get in touch with you, right?
That's right. And the tickets for the Glass Slipper Ball, there's a very limited number of those tickets, only about 250, 225. And those tickets can only be bought through the ballet office. That's the 766-8379 number.
And the Ballet Theater is holding auditions for Youth Ballet, the junior company of BRBT, tomorrow, 4
that's,
o'clock.
That's right, 4 o'clock. Youth Ballet is the junior company of BRBT, and the members are 10 to 14 years old. So if you've got a 10 to 14-year-old girl or a girl that will be 10 by June 30th of this year and she's serious about dancing, she should audition to be in Youth Ballet. The auditions start at 4 o'clock. There's only a $5 audition fee. They only have to come with the $5 audition fee, fill out the application, come in classroom attire, leotard, tights, and ballet shoes. They don't need point shoes. It's a great experience. Youth Ballet hits over 30 to 35 performances, stops. They perform at summer camps. They go to retirement communities. They hit the parish libraries in West Baton Rouge and East Baton Rouge Parish. So the girls not only get out in front of the community bringing dance, but they also learn more about the ins and outs of doing a performance and doing a, you know, learning, being adaptable to the environment they're going to be performing in. It's not always a stage. Sometimes it's carpeted. Sometimes it's wooden floor. Sometimes it's tile. You know, the audiences are varying age. You've got, you know, senior citizens to young children to, you know, it just runs the gamut. So it's a really good experience for a dancer in that age group, 10 to 14, that is serious about dancing. And they have a great time. They have a great time.
Well, this is at 10,745 Linkwood Court, dancers age 10 to 14, tomorrow the 13th at 4 p.m., and for those who would like to participate, what should they do?
They should just come tomorrow for 4 o'clock to fill out the application with the $5 audition fee, or they can call our office for more information. There's also information on our website, BatonRougeBallet.org.
BatonRougeBallet.org is where you can find out much more, and throughout the year, the Ballet Theater does outstanding work in our community and has for many years under the tutelage of Molly Bookman, Sharon Matthews, and Tamara Sabine, the development director.
That's right. And speaking of many years, next year, 2010 to 2011 season, will be our 50th anniversary season. And so we are planning. We're in the planning stages of lots of great things for our members and for the community to happen next year.
Very
50
good.
Years.
Oh, we'll want to stay on top of that.
Yeah.
All right. Well, tomorrow and tonight, both evenings at the Magnolia Cemetery, the historic cemetery in downtown Baton Rouge, the Foundation for Historical Louisiana is bringing back to life notable Baton Rougeans to tell their intriguing life stories in the popular Magnolia Memories drama. We had Lenore Feeney on this program a few days ago. It's the seventh production in the series, and the event is slated tonight and tomorrow night. And there are still some availabilities if you'd like to join in the tour through the cemetery and find out more about some historic Baton Rougeans of the past. Sarah Morgan is one of them. More recently, Bill Long, who died in 2006. His photographs were inspired by Magnolia Cemetery, and the acting is quite superb. Director Robert Wilson, again, is in character as Charles Ravenhorst, the gatekeeper. And if you don't have plans, Saturday night, 7 o'clock, for I think it's the fifth or sixth year running. Yours truly will be one of the angels, so I'll be there in angel regalia and hope to see a lot of friends who listen to this program. And 297-5633 is your number as we move along and are joined by another fascinating author, one who has a great story to tell about Louisiana and the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina. Jenny, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Now, I want to make sure I have the pronunciation of your name correct.
It's Pavlovic.
Pavlovic.
Mm-hmm.
And Jenny, your book was inspired by what happened in this area after the calamity of and catastrophe of Hurricane Katrina almost 5 years ago. Tell us a bit more.
Well, I live in Minnesota, and I was one of those people that ended up coming down and helping take care of the many rescued animals after Hurricane Katrina. And I volunteered at the Lamar Dixon Expo Center in Gonzales and was fortunate to be hosted in the home of a family in Baton Rouge while I was helping out. And the book tells the story of an old cattle dog that I encountered at Lamar Dixon who came in with no identification and no way for us to tell where she came from. And we ended up having to evacuate for Hurricane Rita. And at that time, they had started shipping animals out to different parts of the country because we were running out of space for them and there was nowhere for them to go. And I ended up driving home with her and fostering her in Minnesota. So it's the story of my journey with her and how she recovered from the trauma and trying to find out all the things I did afterward to try to find out where she came from.
Well, you have an interesting background. It's Dr. Jenny Pavlovic, and you're a biomedical engineering consultant, right?
Yes.
So this is a bit diverse as far as your interests.
Well, I also have had dogs, my own dogs, for many years, and I do a lot of activities with my dogs. I've always been an animal lover, so as far as my avocation goes, I guess it's really in line with my hobbies and what I do in my spare time.
The book is Eight State Hurricane Kate, The Journey and Legacy of a Katrina Cattle Dog. And you have received all kinds of awards for this, numerous to mention, but I'm sure you're heartened by the response.
Yes, it's been really wonderful, and it's I think what I like about that is that her story is probably so typical of many of the animals that were lost and people trying to find their animals, and I think that's why people relate to it so much. It's been really gratifying to receive the awards, mostly just because I wanted to get her story out there, and that helps get her story out there.
Well, what's happened in the past 5 years since you experienced this and started crafting your book?
Well, I think a lot of people have come together across the country, and I know the PETS Act has been passed as a national law, to enable people to take their pets when they evacuate. And groups like Mutt Shack have actually helped make that happen because the law didn't always have any funding with it. So I think a lot of things are changing. I don't want to give away too much of the story, but I still do not know where Kate came from. And I really would like to be able to give peace to somebody if anyone's still looking for her. So even with all the publicity and the awards and everything with the book, I still don't know who lost this dog. And that's been a really difficult part of it for me.
Mm-hmm. Kate is quite an animal.
Yeah. And she was really, I think she went through a lot. I think she was in the water for a while, we're guessing, and she was rescued from a rooftop, supposedly, but her paperwork had all kinds of inconsistencies on it. She might have come from Plaquemines Parish, or she might have come from the 17th Street Canal area. So I still don't know after almost 5 years where she really came from is still a mystery.
Jenny Pavlovic is our guest for a few more moments. The book is 8-State Hurricane Kate, The Journey and Legacy of a Katrina Cattle Dog. Now, you've been back a few times, haven't you?
Mm-hmm. I did. I was back to New Orleans a couple times in 2008, and then I went to Gonzales and Baton Rouge and visited the family that had hosted me in 2005. I went to Plaquemines Parish and met with people at Paws and Rescue Ranch trying to find out if anyone knew where Kate came from. So I've made a lot of friends down there and have a lot of connections.
When will you return, Jenny?
I don't have the date set yet, but May or June I have a new book coming out called The Not Without My Dog book that is designed to help people, to teach everyone all the things I've learned in the last few years and how to organize all your dog's information into one book. So if you travel or if you have to evacuate or if you leave your dog at the kennel when you're gone, you can have everything in one place and you can plan ahead to know what to do. So I'll definitely let you know when I get the trip planned and when I'm coming into town.
I look forward to that. Now, the book, 8-State Hurricane Kate, The Journey and Legacy of a Katrina Cattle Dog, it's available in various places, but is there a particular place you would suggest other than the Internet? Do you know of local bookstores that would readily have it?
I think Barnes & Noble has it. I need to get it into some independent bookstores down there. It's available at the number 8statekate.net.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a list of, as I add stores that are carrying it, I add that on the website so people can find them.
Well, one of the good things, if you will, that came out of the catastrophe of Katrina was that people are now more cognizant of what happens when animals are faced with the same kind of natural disaster that humans are enduring. And I think because of Katrina, we're doing a lot better as far as protecting animals.
I think a lot of people have come together and worked hard in the last 4.5 years to change some things and to make sure people are aware of what they need to do to protect their animals.
Well, Jenny Pavlovic, Dr. Pavlovic, we thank you for joining us today. And you have any parting thoughts about your experience of 5 years ago and how it's not only shaped your writing, but it's left a remarkable impact on you as an individual?
Well, one thing I've learned that I think will help people is to make sure that you have identification on your pets with also a phone number for someone outside of your area that could be called if you're not available or if your phone's not working. I've just learned a lot about from all the people that have come together to help animals and that there's just a lot of good in this country and in Louisiana. And just make sure that you have a plan. Even if where I live we have tornadoes, you never know what could happen, and have a plan for your animals in case something comes up.
Well, very good. And we congratulate you on the appropriate plaudits you have received and honors for 8-State Hurricane Kate, The Journey and Legacy of a Katrina Cattle Dog, and hopefully we'll know someday who Kate belonged to pre-Katrina.
Can I mention one more thing?
Sure.
On YouTube, youtube.com, if you search 8-State Hurricane Kate and look at the Do You Know This Dog video, that would be for people who might recognize Kate to look at that video. And if you recognize her, please contact me.
All righty. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Jenny Pavlovic.
Thank you very much.
Take care.
Bye.
Don't Ask, Don't Tell. That was the major topic today with Commander John Philostrat, but did want to mention again that come rain or shine, tomorrow the Baton Rouge St. Patrick's Day Parade will roll. The wearing of the green, this was started by WBRZ weatherman Pat Shingleton, and he decided to bring the Irish traditions to Baton Rouge. It starts at 10 o'clock, 75 floats departing from the corner of South Acadian and 100 Oaks and continuing on to South Eugene Terrace and Perkins Road. And it will be quite a show with 13 marching bands and 3 pipe bands and the U.S. Marine Corps band arriving in our city from New Orleans. That's it for this week, and we thank you for joining us and hope you have a great week. Be safe, a great weekend, and we'll be back Monday. For Todd Dunn, I'm Jim Inkster. Podcasts and more information are available at WRKF.org.